Welcome into Football Insiders, everyone. My name is Kyle Yates. I am your host for today. Brett, taking some much-deserved time off here, stepping in as the host. I am the new audio and video content director here at Pro Football Network, and it's my second day at the company, and in my second day with the company, I get to sit down with two absolute legends here. That is Tony Pauline. That is Trey Wingo. Gentlemen, Tony, I'll ask you this first. How are you doing here with the chaos that is NFL free agency the past couple months? How are you doing managing all this time?
Trying to get every morsel of news from these pro days, which really, really start to, March, it starts to build up. The last 2 weeks are crazy. It's been hectic. There's not too much time to do anything other than shower and sleep. And that'll come like for a few hours.
I absolutely agree there, Trey. Same question to you. How has the past couple months been you surviving the chaos? It feels like we hit the Super Bowl and it just didn't stop. There wasn't that little lull. Let's just continue to roll.
Yeah, Kyle, first of all, welcome. Glad to have you on. And day two, they went to throw you in here. I always, and Tony's heard me say this, and Brett says it, and Brett's heard me say it. So there's no offseason in the NFL, right? There's the preseason, there's the regular season, the postseason, and the player procurement season. And that's where we are. And it's going to get a little more hectic as this thing continues. There's only really like 10 days at the end of June, early July, where nothing happens in the NFL. And so we're steamrolling towards the draft, and a lot of things in free agency still may fall because people want to get those picks before the draft. So the NFL has perfected the business of never being out of people's minds. And we live for the content, and we're just here to provide it.
100%. We've got a lot of content here within this show, so let's not waste any time. Let's get right to that. Before we do, though, make sure that if you are watching this over on YouTube, that you hit that like button, that you hit the subscribe. Also, click that bell to get notified when new content drops. We've got a ton more coming your way here, so make sure to hit that like button. Subscribe takes you less than 10 seconds. Helps out the show in a major way. Guys, let's get into some of the activity here from free agency over the last week or so. And there is a team in the NFC East that I have absolutely loved the moves that they have made here this offseason, which I typically do not say about this team. That is the Dallas Cowboys. You look at their moves here, the Stephon Gilmore trade, the Brandon Cooks trade, they franchise tag Tony Pollard. They re-signed Dante Fowler to a one-year deal. I didn't think this would happen, but they release Ezekiel Elliott. They bring in Ronald Jones here. Trey, what are your thoughts on the offseason so far for the Dallas Cowboys?
Yeah, listen, the Cowboys are clearly of the mindset that they have an opportunity to make a Super Bowl run. And people will listen to that and sort of scoff because it's, I get it. The last Super Bowl, they were Super Bowl 30, and we're now approaching Super Bowl 58. Okay, so it's been a bit since the Dallas Cowboys have had that sort of team put together like they did in the 90s. But let me just put something out there. There's only one team in the NFL over the last two seasons that has more regular season wins than the Dallas Cowboys. Only one, and that's the Kansas City Chiefs. The difference, obviously, is what's happened in the postseason. The point being, even with Dak Prescott missing five games last season and throwing a league-high 15 interceptions and a career-worst 15 interceptions for him, the Dallas Cowboys still had their opportunities in that divisional championship game, a divisional round game against the San Francisco 49ers, and they missed a couple of throws. So what I see from the Cowboys is we have an opportunity here to put together the best team we can and make our best run possible at representing the NFC in the Super Bowl. Because let's just be honest about it. The power in the NFL is all in the AFC. I mean, you look at the top seven quarterbacks now, especially when Aaron Rodgers officially goes to the Jets. And it's so top heavy in the AFC. And you go to the NFC and you're like, well, who are the top quarterbacks? And Jalen Hurts is probably number one. Dak is probably number two. He had a very unlike Dak season in 2022 with missing time and the injuries and the interceptions. So they go out and get Stephon Gilmore to help with Trevon Diggs. They get Brandon Cooks for a song. I thought it was one of the best deals I've seen this entire offseason. He's had more 1,000-yard receiving seasons recently than a lot of big-name wide receivers, okay? It was just buried with the Houston Texans because the Texans have been a dumpster fire for a while, and hopefully D'Amico Ryans can fix that around. So they finally realize that Michael Gallup isn't a true number two. He's a real three-wide receiver, which when they had Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb, that's where Gallup flourished. So now you bring in Cooks to go opposite CeeDee Lamb, and you have Gallup now as the third wide receiver. And Ezekiel Elliott being released by them saves them a ton of cap space. And basically, you're going to get similar production from Ronald Jones. And I need people to understand that because we're talking about what Zeke Elliott is now, not what Zeke Elliott was when they drafted him. Tony Pollard has been the number one running back for the last couple of seasons, and the Cowboys have finally figured that out. And that's why he signed his franchise franchise tag contract, and they have until July 17th to work out a long-term deal. Ronald Jones will be exceptional in blitz pickup, in short yard situations, and first and goal situations or end zone situations. That's exactly what they used Ezekiel Elliott for the last couple of years. And so you have him coming in for pennies on the dollar. And the reason why I think this is a big season for the Dallas Cowboys is that people are going to laugh at this. Dak Prescott's going to get a new contract, okay? And that cap hit is coming next year. So they want to try and get together something in 2023. Boy, I have to rework that deal for Dak, which is going to take away some cap space. You know, Leighton Van Der Esch is coming back to the team.
Yep.
Dallas is absolutely in a win now mode. They just got to figure out the postseason. They have been very, very productive and very, very efficient the last two regular seasons. They've got to find a way to kick it into another gear in the postseason. And I think every move they've made this offseason has been about that.
Tony, Trey started talking there and saying about how like they believe that they're making that Super Bowl run. When you look at that division, do you think that they've closed the gap on Philadelphia, right? Philadelphia obviously representing the NFC in the Super Bowl. They've had a little bit of turnover. They were able to retain some key pieces there on defense. But do you think that they've closed that gap on Philadelphia in the NFC East?
Maybe slightly. I mean, it's going to be tough. Philadelphia is a very talented team. They've got talent throughout the depth chart, even with the losses. You know, I think this is Dallas. This is going to be a last gasp effort attempt by Mike McCarthy. I mean, he's got to go deep into the playoffs.
Yeah, he's got to save his own, you know what, this season.
Yeah, or the Dallas going to be looking for, you know, a new head coach heading towards 2024 because, you know, they always fail in the postseason. I thought there were great moves, and these are usually moves by teams who feel that they need, you know, just the last few pieces to throw them over the top. You're going to get more out of Brandon Cooks and Stephon Gilmore than you're going to from any draft pick in the first round, especially where they are selecting. Have they closed the gap? They probably have slightly, but the gap is still huge there, and Philadelphia has a significant edge.
It's really interesting.
It's interesting, though. I mean, if you look at Philadelphia, they lose Miles Sanders, they lose T.J. Edwards, they lose Hargrave, they lose Siamola, they lose Chauncey Gardner-Johnson to the Lions. Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. And Kazir White. The other thing that they lost are both coordinators.
Right.
Okay. Shane Steichen and Gannon are both gone. We said this last year about Jalen Hurts. It was a real step up year for him, obviously, because they had the capital to do something in the draft if they wanted to, if they weren't happy with the way Hurts played. So they go get him AJ Brown and all that worked out. But now we got a lot of turnover. We got a lot of turnover, especially on the coordinator side. And every team that loses the Super Bowl, we said this about Cincinnati last year, right? And then they got back to the AFC Championship game. Everyone's like, oh, look, you know, we're set up for a long-term run. Maybe, you know, it's the last team to lose the Super Bowl and then go win it the next year was the Patriots in Super Bowls 52 and 53. The last team to do it before then was the Miami Dolphins in Super Bowl 5 and Super Bowl 6. So we all fall in love with this idea of, oh, well, this team almost won it a year ago, so they should be back. It almost never happens. It almost never happens. So on paper, Philadelphia probably still has a slight edge. Historically, it doesn't work out that way.
I still think, though, that, you know, they're going to be heavy favorites for the NFC East moving towards the season. Yeah, they lost coordinators, but as we've seen, I mean, how much did we think that they were going to lose when Doug Peterson basically was pushed out the door? And all they did was just continue the momentum. And as we've spoken about on the show, I mean, Howie Roseman probably does not get the credit he deserves.
No, he's fantastic. You know, he and Brett Veach are probably the two best GMs in football right now.
With Dallas, it is interesting, too, to just kind of put a bow on Dallas before we move on here. That, I mean, this team, where they're at right now, you could roll into the NFL season and they could compete deep into the playoffs with this team. We still have the NFL draft to go, right, where they've still got some picks here to add some players. I mean, at that 24 overall off the top of my head, Tony, you can check me there. I mean, Bijan Robinson, we know Jerry Jones wants to make a splash. He did that somewhat with Brandon Cooks here. Bijan Robinson going to the Dallas Cowboys would not surprise me at all. The rookie running back out of Texas. Let's move on here to Detroit here. Let's go over to the NFC North here. Trey, Detroit has also had just an absolutely stellar offseason here so far. What have they done in your opinion? Is this the way that they needed to attack the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, Detroit was the feel-good story of the year sort of last year, right? They started out in training camp at Hard Knocks and everyone fell in love with them. And then they lost their first three games, can't remember what it was. And then, you know, I started calling them the Detroit Lions because there was no D in Detroit. You know, they could put up points left and right, but they couldn't stop anybody. And they finally got that figured out. And I just love the moves they've made this offseason. They get cornerbacks Cameron Sutton from Pittsburgh and Emmanuel Mosley from the 49ers. They lose Jamal Williams. Obviously, that's a big loss. But they pick up David Montgomery. They get Graham Glasgow back from the Broncos, who started his career with the Detroit Lions. And they get Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. Now, I was shocked, Tony, that the market was this low for Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. It's a one-year, what, $8 million deal? Mm-hmm. But these are the little pieces that you can plug in Detroit. And with the impending departure of Aaron Rodgers, and who knows what's going to happen in Minnesota, they've already lost a couple of pieces. And you know, we're hearing potentially maybe Minnesota might be one of these teams that could be eventually talking to Lamar Jackson. Not even signing him, just talking to him. Someone should probably talk to the former league MVP. You could make the argument that the Lions are the team to beat in the NFC North this year. They have stable quarterback play with Jared Goff. Not spectacular, but stable. They hit it in the draft last year with a couple of players, Aiden Hutchinson and Rodrigo, the linebacker that everyone loved in Hard Knocks. And they got to get Jameson Williams for a full season. Remember, he was the other number one pick out of Alabama last year that tore his ACL in the national championship game. But didn't come back till deep into the season. Detroit is building things the right way. And this is a regime in Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes, the general manager. They both got six-year deals, Tony, as you well know. And you know, the other regimes, well, almost every regime not named Jim Caldwell has failed in Detroit. Let's just be honest about that, okay? Unless you want to go back to the Wayne Fonts era. It's been a problem. And these two guys and have decided they got long-term deals from ownership, and they made a commitment to draft and develop. And they made, obviously, the big trade to go get Jared Goff and get rid of Matthew Stafford and pick up some picks. And some of those picks turned out to be pretty good. I just think at the end of the day, this is a team that is building in the right way. And they're doing things the right way. And they're going to draft and develop. And they have, you know, they have the long-term commitment from the front office and from ownership. And obviously, if it goes sour this year, that may change. But I feel like they're putting things in place to make Detroit an interesting place to watch football again.
Yeah, let's not forget, they retained John Comiskey and Alex Anzalone, who were two big pieces of that defense. I spoke with an executive from the Detroit Lions at the combine before free agency even began, and they felt very good about their direction. As they kept pointing out to me, they have five selections in the top 81 picks in the draft. Yeah. Two first-rounders, two second-rounders. They have a strong free agency period. They retain some of their major pieces, and now they're going to go get top prospects. So, and they love the coach. I mean, they've bought in with the coach. They love the guy is a player's coach, and everything seems to be moving in the right direction for the Detroit Lions. There is a good feeling there in the front office, in the locker room, that you know they will be able to take the next step. And what you said makes a lot of sense. I mean, they could be the team to beat in the NFC North when the season begins.
Yeah, and I think that everyone in the Lions organization knows that people are talking about them that way. And you get a sense from talking to people inside the organization that they're telling everybody, hey, look, everyone's going to love us, all right? But we haven't done shit. That's what they're telling. We haven't done anything. And, you know, the last line, the last sequence before they rolled the credits at the end of Hard Knocks last year, they asked Dan Campbell, what are the 2022 Detroit Lions? And it was really amazing sort of television because they didn't cut anything. It took him like 45 seconds or 30 seconds to figure out what he wanted to say. And when you have, for lack of a better term, dead air for that long, it becomes uncomfortable. And they didn't cut a second of it. And after that really, really long pause, Dan Campbell said, the Detroit Lions are the team that can and will. And then they went to the credits, end of Hard Knocks. And I think that towards the end of last season, we saw that. And the way they finished the year, I think, was so important to me. But by the time they took on the Packers in that Sunday night game at Lambeau Field, they knew they had no shot at the playoffs. But they went out there and damn sure made well that the Packers didn't either.
Yep.
And that, to me, is the ultimate buy-in of players to their head coach. Yeah, we didn't get where we wanted to go, but screw these guys. We're not letting them go where they want to go either. And that's when you have belief. And when you have, I don't want to go Ted Lasso on you here, but when you have belief, things are changing in Detroit. And that can be a very powerful tool. And I just love the way they ended the season. I love what they've done going into the season. As Tony said, they're loaded up in the draft. The Detroit Lions have to be taken seriously now. And I can't remember the last time anyone said that.
The one part, too, that I don't believe either of you mentioned, on top of everything that Detroit has done this offseason, is that they retained Ben Johnson as offensive coordinator. Like, yeah. That is massive, massive, massive. If they didn't retain Ben Johnson, I don't know if we're having this conversation necessarily of them being the team to beat in the NFC North. Tony, I didn't want to move off of Detroit before we talked about the NFL draft angle of this, and you touched on it a little bit here, but Cam Sutton, Emmanuel Mosley, two talented corners there that they added in free agency to go along with Jeff Okuda, who is still on the roster. Hopefully he can turn it around here, but does this affect what they can do here at number six overall? Because number six and number 18 in the NFL draft, do you think that corner is still on the table for them at number six?
Yeah, if they love Christian Gonzalez enough, I still think that's the direction they go. We'll touch on this later on, but I think that pick, the number six pick, is when the Jalen Carter watch starts, because they could also use a defensive tackle. Jalen Carter's there at six. Is he too good of a value to pass up? The potential top pick in the entire draft falls down to them at six. I think it helps them, but I don't think it's going to basically dismiss the possibility of a corner with the sixth selection.
Tony, that's so interesting, because you can pick to the last few drafts where some guy, by his own problems, falls and he goes to a team that he probably shouldn't have gone to, and it creates a perfect marriage, right? You saw what happened with Laramie Tunsil, who's reset the offensive line market a second time. When he went to Miami and eventually had that deal to go to Houston. We saw it a couple of years ago with Trey Smith, the offensive lineman out of Tennessee, who had a heart issue, and the Chiefs got him in the sixth round.
He's
never have gone that far. He's a first-round talent. And we're not even talking about Jalen Carter falling out of the top 10. But you're right. Most people, just talent-wise, had him as the number one overall best pick in this draft. And obviously the incident with the racing and what happened there, and then he performed poorly at his pro day. Look, kid's 21 years old. He's going through a lot of stuff right now, self-inflicted. Let's just be clear about it. But a lot of that is, to me, that a lot of that is fixable. Like, that's a fixable, those are fixable things. And if you can get a guy who's supposed to go number one overall, potentially number six overall, where there's a real need on that team, especially when they release Michael Brockers in the offseason, if he falls to them, and I know fall, it doesn't sound crazy to say he falls all the way to six, but when you're the number one overall prospect, maybe six is falling a little bit. That would be a really interesting scenario for Detroit.
And that's where the watch starts, because if he falls to six and, they have the need there and they pass on him, that just tells you that, he doesn't fit the mold. They're not comfortable with taking Jalen Carter there.
Let's double back on that Jalen Carter conversation here in just a little bit. Let's move over from the NFC over to the AFC here. Denver has had one of the most peculiar and interesting off seasons, in my opinion. It's really interesting to watch these teams and try to figure out, that have new GMs, new head coaches, new coordinators. Like, what is the game plan? What's the point of attack here? Denver is, Trey, what is Denver doing here, as they brought in Russell Wilson last offseason? Yeah. It didn't exactly go the way that anyone planned. And the moves that they have made here this offseason are really, really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I have this list of all the moves from every team in the offseason, and the Broncos list is like the longest, okay? They bring in center guard Ben Powers. They get in Mike McGlinchey, Jared Stidham from the Raiders, Chris Manners from the Jaguars, Zach Allen from the Cardinals, Samaje Perine from the Bengals, Michael Burton from the Chiefs, Tre'Mont Smith from the Texans, and a punter, Riley Dixon, from the Rams. They lose a bunch of players. It's pretty clear that Sean Payton has an identity that he wants to put in place here, right? I mean, that's fairly, fairly obvious. But I love the moves of Powers and McGlinchey to shore up that offensive line. But as Tony knows, and I'm sure, Kyle, you know as well, when you talk about the sacks with Russell Wilson, this goes back to his days in Seattle as much as it goes back to his days in Denver. The way he plays produces sacks, okay? And when you're Mr. Invincible or Incredible, whatever his name was, I don't know, and you get away with doing all these really big splashy plays, you could put up with that, right? But when you stink, like he stunk in Denver, you can't put up with that. So it's great that they're getting McGlinchey and Powers to help protect him, but at some point Sean Payton has to have a conversation with Russell Wilson and say, you're killing the team by some of the things you're doing here. And what I find interesting about this is there are multiple reports, and have been multiple reports out there, that two of their top receivers are available for the right price. Now, see, this is where we get into this weird time of the year. I call it lying season in the NFL, all right? Because you don't know what anyone's really saying, because it's all counter-espionage and subterfuge. Like, he could say, Sean Payton or anybody in the front office of the Broncos, hey, we're not shopping the wide receivers. We just, you know, people were calling about them, okay? But you put that out there for a reason. All that stuff comes out there for a reason, and you try and figure out what that reasoning is. Why would both Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton potentially be available? Well, that tells you that somewhere in that Broncos organization, they think they need a shakeup at the wide receiver position. They're going to get Tim Patrick back from the ACL. They still have a KJ Hamler there. So somebody somewhere in that organization isn't comfortable with the wide receiver core that they have. And you have to ask yourself, why would that be? Is it just Sean Payton coming in there wanting his guys and setting the tone a little bit? Or is there something deeper in that wide receiver room that we don't know about? Because those are two very productive wide receivers who had obviously not very productive years because of the quarterback issues.
I also think it tells you that they want more ammunition in the draft. Their first pick isn't until the 68th selection, which is in the third round. So if somebody, you know, blows the doors off and gives them an incredible offer for one of those receivers, they're not going to give either of those guys away. But if somebody comes with a huge offer and they can reload in the draft with the new coach, and you got to remember, you know, this coach, Sean Payton, didn't select these receivers.
Right. Not his guys.
He basically inherited them. So if he can trade one of them away and get a lot of draft picks and start to bring his own guys into the mix, onto the depth chart, that's what he's going to do. And this happens all the time when you see regime changes in the NFL.
I think it's interesting, too. You look at the names that they have brought in. You mentioned all that list, right, Trey? It's a super long list of the players that they brought in. Ben Powers, Mike McGlinchey on the offensive line. What are they known for? They're known for their run blocking. You bring in a fullback, Michael Burton. You know, like that signals that we are going to run the football. Is this truly just a situation of we're taking the ball out of Russell Wilson's hand? It did not work well for us last year. We are going to lean on that run game. And if we're going to lean on the run game, why do we need Tim Patrick, KJ Hamler, Jerry Jeudy, Cortland Sutton? Why do we need this super deep stable of wide receivers? Let's try to recoup some of that draft capital. I think it's really interesting to see what Denver is doing here and if that strategy is going to play out for them.
Yeah, look, obviously you want to get more out of Russell Wilson. I mean, like, nobody thought that it would be the last week of the regular season where he would finally have as many touchdown passes as bathrooms in his house, right? Nobody.
It was one of my favorite things of last season, by the way.
It was just ridiculous. So you have to believe he's going to be better. But the thing that makes him better is the running game. Look, even the Chiefs figured that out. Okay. Isaiah Pacheco made them a more dangerous passing offense because you had to respect the possibility of the run. So, I think that goes hand in hand. And I think Tony's situation is correct. I think if we're not picking until the late 60s, if we can up our draft capital and maybe lean a little bit on the morning game, it all sort of works together. But, you know, again, I think the essence of a running game is necessary. But at the end of the day, if you're going to win in the NFL, you have to be able to put the ball in the air and move the ball that way.
Let's move on to another AFC West team here. Trey, what are the Kansas City Chiefs doing in free agency that reminds you of another team from a different era?
Yeah, and not too far distant era, by the way. You know, we've had a lot of people start throwing around the D word with the Kansas City Chiefs. They've been to three Super Bowls in the last five seasons. You know, they went back-to-back in 54 and 55. They've won two out of those three. And to me, the way the Chiefs and Brett Veach, the general manager, are going about building around their quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, is strikingly similar to how Bill Belichick built around Tom Brady and the Patriots in all those Super Bowl runs from Super Bowl 38, really, because, well, Super Bowl 36, I guess, but Super Bowl 38 and 39 when they went back-to-back all the way through Super Bowl 54 or 53, when the Patriots won their last Super Bowl. And it was, we know what we have. We have a generational first ballot Hall of Fame franchise quarterback in Patrick Mahomes. We have a couple of other pieces that are necessary. In New England, it was Rob Gronkowski. In Kansas City, it's Travis Kelce. You know, we have a playmaker on defense, whether it was Vince Wilfork or Gerard Mayo or Teddy Bruschi or someone like that. And obviously for the Chiefs, it's Chris Jones, the defensive tackle. most other parts become replaceable. And what sustained the Patriots during their unbelievable run in the 2000s and the 2010s was their ability to bring people in on pennies on the dollar, allow them to perform, and they'll go get paid somewhere else. Because the promise was, if you come here, we're going to be in the Super Bowl almost every year, and you'll have an opportunity to get that ring. And just look at what the Chiefs did this past year, okay? Once Christian Kirk's contract was signed, they knew they were not going to be able to get a deal done for Tyreek Hill. So they made that deal and got way more from Miami than the Packers got for Devontae Adams when they shipped him to the Raiders. And they used a lot of that draft capital to hit home runs in the draft last year. Okay, I mentioned Isaiah Pacheco in the seventh round. Both Karlaftis and McDuffie were solid for them in the first round. And then they get Cook, the safety out of Cincinnati. And then they get the other two cornerbacks that they picked up in the middle rounds of that draft. And they all were playing on Super Bowl Sunday as rookies, most of them starting. They had an amazing draft, which allows them now to bring in people like Juju Smith-Schuster on a one-year, $9 million deal. Hey, you played great for us. It was awesome. Listen, this is not something that we think is sustainable for us. So good luck. Go get paid. He gets, weirdly or ironically, a $33 million deal from the New England Patriots, who are in a different mode now. And what the Chiefs are doing is picking up veterans that can plug and play and help them sort of keep building until they find their replacements on a rookie wage scale. The signings that the Chiefs picked up. First, Mike Edwards from the Bucs. Juan Thornhill goes to the Browns on a pretty big deal. Mike Edwards comes in on a one-year deal, pennies on the dollar. I expect not to be much of a drop-off of play there. You pick up Drew Tranquil, okay, from the Chargers at a one-year, $8 million deal. In that defense, he's going to find ways to make plays. Obviously, their big signing was Juwan Taylor, the right tackle for the Jacksonville Jaguars, whom I believe is going to play left tackle now that Orlando Brown is gone, and Lucas Niang is going to be in there at right tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs as long as he's healthy. They're finding pieces that they can plug and play just to add to the overall concept of the team that they built. And it's just strikingly similar to me of how the New England Patriots did this for years when they had Tom Brady on that contract, which was somewhat team-friendly. And, you know, Patrick Mahomes' deal is incredibly team-friendly if you look at the numbers and how it's played out since they signed with that contract extension. I think that this is the way they're going. As long as they feel that Patrick Mahomes is at the peak of his powers and they are going to be in the Super Bowl every year, I think this is the way they're going to operate. Now, they do have a glaring need of wide receiver, and they've been named as potential suitors for both Odell Beckham Jr. and DeAndre Hopkins. I would think that they would prefer to have Odell on a one-year prove-it deal and then, God bless you, go get another contract somewhere else than try and make a trade for DeAndre Hopkins. But they only have three wide receivers right now under contract. It's Sky Moore, Kadarius Toney, who they have for 3 years potentially on a rookie deal still, and Marquez Valdes-Scantling that they signed last offseason. So clearly they need to pick up wide receiver depth, and obviously Odell would be a huge benefit for them. But they are going to be of this mindset and mode that we know what our franchise is, we know what our cornerstones are, and we just need to move and match these pieces much in the same way that the Patriots did all those years to extend that incredibly long run. And Trent Brown is the ultimate example of that. Trent Brown had a couple of years in San Francisco, then signed with the Patriots, played for a couple of years and had a tremendous couple of seasons, went to the Raiders, got a huge contract, got paid. Then that fizzled out. And guess where he is? He's back playing once again for the New England Patriots for pennies on the dollar.
Well, you kind of stole my thunder there, because after the quarterback, the Patriots, what they did was they prioritized the offensive line for obvious reasons. And, you know, as much success as Andy Reid has had with Patrick Mahomes, they've had great success with that offensive line. And I got to kind of laugh for people who blast the Kansas City Chiefs for the contract they gave to Juwan Taylor. I mean, this is a team that gave Joe Thuney a nice contract, and look how he's playing. This is a team that's had, you know, great success on the offensive line, which is what, as you pointed out, when, you know, the Patriots via free agency, via trades, things like that, you know, brought that offensive line together to protect Tom Brady. So obviously you got to keep Patrick Mahomes happy. You got to keep paying Patrick Mahomes, and you also have to protect Patrick Mahomes.
Well, you look at that offensive line, too. You talked about the players that they've got there, Joe Thuney. Then you got Creed Humphrey. We talked about him earlier, Trey Smith. Then Juwan Taylor, who is a better fit as a pass, you know, protector as a better pass blocker than a run blocker, which is Orlando Brown was the opposite of that, which made that trade super interesting at the time. It worked out. But now it's a situation too. Tony, I'll throw this to you really quick and then we'll move on to what we're hearing around the NFL. But that pick that Kansas City has at 31 or 32, depending on how you calculate Miami and their forfeited pick in the first round, is that a spot with the weakness that they got? Trey mentioned the wide receivers there, MVS. You got Kadarius Toney, who's great when he's healthy, but that's a massive, you know, question mark moving into each season. Sky Moore, loved him coming out. We didn't really see much from him in his rookie season. Is that a spot where we need to be mocking a little bit more and talking more about a wide receiver there in the first round?
I think it's a part of the conversation. I think there's a good chance there's going to be a receiver there, a good receiver, a guy, yeah, a guy like a Kayshon Boutte of LSU, who probably didn't play as well as people thought, had hoped that last year, entered the draft anyway. And you know, as we know with LSU receivers, they're better in the NFL than they are in college. You know, Zay Flowers there. Zay Flowers would be an excellent pickup, would be a perfect fit for the Kansas
City. Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, I think the X factor will be Quentin Johnston, which we'll be talking about real soon. Does he fall down if he doesn't work out? So I think it's a situation where, yeah, they have to consider it if the receiver is the best player on their board when they're called to the clock.
All right, before we get to what we're hearing around the NFL, there is still a ton going on around the sports world, everyone, and you can get involved in the action by going over to Caesars Sportsbook. Go over to Caesars.com and place your first wager. If you lose, you get 100% of your stake back as a free bet, up to $1,250. And win or lose, you'll also get 1,000 reward credits and 1,000 tier credits. Redeem this offer using promo code PFNCZR at Caesars.com. Redeem this offer using promo code PFNCZR at Caesars.com. Additionally, it's always fantasy football season. This is my heart. This is what I got my start in here in this industry in fantasy football. It is always fantasy football season with Underdog Fantasy Best Ball Tournaments. No lineup setting, nothing that you have to worry about. You get to draft, you get to do the most fun part of fantasy football, and then walk away. Start drafting now and get up to a $100 deposit bonus when you use the promo code PFN at signup. UnderdogFantasy.com with the code PFN at signup to get a $100 deposit bonus. Tony, let's move on here to what we're hearing. That we talked about him earlier when we were talking about Detroit there at number 6 overall. I mean, arguably the number one talent in this draft, but obviously a lot going on off the field. What is the latest that we're hearing here with Jalen Carter, the interior defensive line prospect out of Georgia?
Well, he pleaded no contest to the charges that were brought against him, which is the wise move because you've got to get this legal situation settled before the draft. Or as we talked about, you know, the unknown would kill him, would hurt him. I apologize, would really hurt him. So that's looks like it's settled. Now he's going to have a pro day workout and he's going to have to show up in shape. He's going to have to really live up to expectations that 9 pounds be 9 pounds heavier at the pro day compared to the combine. And the fact that he wasn't able to finish the workout, that really hurt him. And there's going to be a lot of interviews and he's going to have to answer questions honestly. And teams are going to have to be comfortable with Jalen Carter. They're going to have to believe that, you know, he was just not the beneficiary of great talent and relied on that great talent, you know, to do what he did at Georgia, as well as having outstanding players around him. But Jalen Carter is going to have to show some fire. I mean, as Trey said earlier, he's gone through a lot. I mean, anybody, much to his own doing, you know, put it on himself. And anybody would probably act in the same sort of way with all the stress and everything else. But listen, I mean, the clock is ticking and these are the biggest job interviews of Jalen Carter's life. So I've been told that teams have been going through there and working out some of the defensive players and Jalen Carter has not been part of those workouts, whether that's by design with the team or something else, I don't know. But again, he's going to have a pro day workout sooner rather than later, his own individual workout, and he's going to have to show that he's in shape, that he's ready to play football, and that he's committed to playing football.
Trey, I love rocking the mock drafts over on the Pro Football Network mock draft simulator, and every time that I get to, you know, we talked about the Jalen Carter stockwatch, every time we get to where I'm like, I don't know where to put Jalen Carter. Like, I don't know where in the world. So let's just play this forward. Let's assume, Trey, that we do get this legal situation behind him. And where is sort of the floor? Like, in your opinion, where is sort of the floor based on what you're hearing to? Like, what is sort of the floor for Jalen Carter going into the 2023 NFL draft?
You know, what Tony said, I think, is so important. More than what we've talked about and the overweight on his pro day and obviously the issues that led him to leave the combine, the the personal interviews that he has with teams, I think, are going to be the deciding factor, because you can look at this short window of Jalen Carter physically, right? Where, you know, obviously the news came out and he didn't perform well. He was 9 pounds overweight. Or you can go look back at the body of work that he's had. I think the thing that's going to be most important for him is he's going to have to convince some people when he has these visits with teams and talks to them that he's not a problem, that he's not a guy that has a bunch of issues, that he's a guy who got caught up in a situation and it affected him and it bothered him, but now he's ready to put that behind him and go to work. And it only takes one, right? It only takes one of these guys, because the talent is undeniable. And Tony, you've seen this as much as I have. People will say, we're not interested, we're not interested, we're not interested. But then when it's his name being there and you're on the clock, suddenly all their "we're not interested" their interest. I'll just go back to a couple years ago, right? When the Cowboys were selecting. And that was the year a lot of players opted out of playing because of COVID. And Jerry Jones went on and said, you know, that's a real black mark against a player in our book. If a player decided to opt out of COVID, I don't think that would fit for us. And who did they take in the first round? Micah Parsons, who sat out a COVID year. Okay. So people can say whatever they want right now, but at the end of the day, when you see the talent and you see your name or your team's name there and his name still available, more often than not, that talent is going to decide that that name is probably going to be called.
And they traded up for Micah Parsons too.
Yeah. COVID player, we can't handle that.
Traded up with a division rival. Jalen, it's not an exact science. So even if he falls, if a team takes him early, we'll see if the gamble pays off. If he falls and he turns out to be great value, it's not an exact science. You're going to have to go by what the scouts say, if you believe them. And he's got to prove that this was a one-off incident. That's what teams want to know. This is not a tendency. This is not a trend. It's a one-off incident. He's passed it. It was his fault. It was stupid. Let's move forward. That's what teams want to know. That's what teams have to believe in order to take Carter early.
Well, and NFL GMs view the NFL draft as risk management, right? It's truly like, what is the risk associated? There are some prospects that come out like Joe Burrow in previous years. It's like, there's very little risk with this guy. So yes, he's going to go number one overall, but it's not necessarily as much for NFL teams as what you have done in the past. It's, is this going to come back to bite us in the future? That's what they've got to figure out. They've got to figure out the individual to find out this is something that is truly going to come back and bite them in the future. Let's talk about, you know, Jalen Carter was that number one overall pick in a lot of mock drafts there, but now that is going to the Carolina Panthers here. We typically think that that is going to be a quarterback versus a defensive player there with how much they moved. What are we hearing with the number one overall pick in the 2023 NFL draft, Tony?
Well, we're going to hear a lot of things over the next couple of weeks, but you know, right now the Panthers favor either CJ Richardson or CJ Stroud or Anthony Richardson. Frank Reich came out and he was asked about Bryce Young, and he says, well, Bryce Young's size is not going to be held against him as far as we're concerned. And that's what he's got to say, because they have to go through the process. People need to know, as we're taping this show right now, Bryce Young is probably finishing up his pro day workout at Alabama for NFL scouts, for Frank Reich, for the brain trust of the Carolina Panthers, as well as the general manager, Scott Fitterer, who were all at Ohio State. So I think Frank Reich is saying the right things. You don't want to exclude anybody at this point, even though it seems like the top two quarterbacks on their board are either C.J. Stroud or Anthony Richardson, or at least that's the way that they're leaning. You can't discount Bryce Young. The guy has been too terrific the past couple of seasons, Heisman Trophy winner. You know, doesn't have great size, doesn't have the big arm, but he gets it between the ears. And that's going to be an interesting conversation, an interesting interview between Frank Reich, the former quarterback, as well as Bryce Young.
Yeah, Tony, a couple of things, if you don't mind me bouncing these ideas off you. Anthony Richardson, I mean, that's the ultimate boom or bust, right? I mean, look, this guy's an athletic freak. There's no question about it. But can you really take him at number one overall?
I wouldn't. Yeah. You know, a couple of things. Number one, as we talked about last week, how much input does the owner have? I mean, if Frank Reich and Scott Fritterer want C.J. Stroud, but the owner wants Anthony Richardson because he wants to make a big splash, how much input is that going to have? Is he going to get his way? And you have to remember, when scouts look at a player, they always say, what does this guy do best? And when you look at Anthony Richardson, he's got the arm, he's got the athleticism, he's got the size, he can make plays in the pocket, he can roll outside the pocket. So when they look at sort of the bad portions of the game, the fact that the throws get away from him, the fact that he never carried Florida on their shoulders. I mean, they lost to Vanderbilt this year. They got beaten up by Florida State, where he completed 30% of his passes. Football coaches do exactly that. They say, well, we're going to coach this guy to be, you know, to basically be more accurate. Doesn't always work out. I would agree with you. I wouldn't take Anthony Richardson, but the word is, and I heard this even yesterday at Ohio State Pro Day, he is in the conversation. He is in the mix for that number one pick.
And real quickly, I think it's smart for Frank Reich to say everything he's saying, because they may actually love one guy the most, but they don't want anybody to know that. Yeah, right. They want everybody to think, oh, we're good with either one of them. So maybe someone comes up with an offer that blows them away. Look, Kyle, you said earlier, it's not only about teams minimizing risks, it's about maximizing the value of the pick.
Right.
Okay. The pick isn't the draft pick isn't about a player. It's about the pick itself and what the value of the pick is. For example, in Chicago now, what, they're ninth? Well, you know, people say, what do they do at nine? I said, if I were them, I'd see if I could trade that back and get more picks, you know, because it's about the value of the pick in relation to how it helps your team. If you think one player can help your team immensely, then you're all in on that player. But you have to understand what the value of the pick is. It's not just a player. It's what that pick can bring you in return if somebody else values a player more than the pick itself.
Well, and it also ties...
Trading down is going to be difficult, because if you made that move up, you gave away all that draft capital, you're going to get a quarterback. Even if somebody gives them a great offer and they trade back and they miss out on the quarterbacks, they're in a worse situation. So, you know, that has been talked about. I think it's going to be very difficult for them to trade back. Someone's going to have to really blow them off the earth with a huge offer. I don't think that will happen.
That's what I was just about to say, too, is that it ties in perfectly with that, where, you know, they aren't going to say who they prefer at this point because they're also trying to maximize value. They're not necessarily moving back to or looking to move back to four, you know, five with Seattle or anything like that. That does push them out of this quarterback market, potentially, if you see quarterbacks going 1, 2, 3, 4. But Houston at number two, if Houston is absolutely in love with Bryce Young, then they have no reason to say, you know, they want to keep pushing. They want to keep pushing Bryce Young. If it truly is CJ Stroud and Anthony Richardson, continue to push Bryce Young, get Houston to come up, and you recoup some of that draft capital moving back. Let's go to Ohio State Pro Day here, as we are, you know, Tony, you were there, correct? You were at Ohio State Pro Day. We've got a few prospects that are at the top of this draft class. We just talked about one of them, CJ Stroud. We've got Jaxon Smith-Njigba, the wide receiver there. Very, very talented. A lot of unknowns with him, though, depending on, you know, how people view him and the fact that he didn't play much this past year. And then, of course, the offensive tackle, Paris Johnson Jr. So what are you hearing here with these three prospects?
Yeah, it's interesting to see how the media views or what went on, what happened yesterday, as opposed to while I was there. C.J. Stroud had a really good workout. It wasn't an elite passing workout. It wasn't a knockout. It was very, very good. I took a lot of heat at the combine when I said C.J. Stroud didn't kill the workout at the combine. And when I talked to Ohio State people, they agree with me. They said he was very good in the short and intermediate throws, but his deep passes, you know, left a lot to be desired. It was the exact opposite yesterday. His short and intermediate throws were solid, but he wasn't hitting the targets, you know, precisely. And that's what you want in a pro day workout when you're throwing in shorts and a t-shirt. You don't want the receivers adjusting backwards or leaving their feet. That happened a couple of times. And if you were able to watch the workout, Stroud was actually getting a little frustrated with himself at that. The deep passes down the field were incredible. I mean, he's known as a great vertical passer. He showed that. He threw one fantastic ball to Smith-Njigba down the field. It was about a 45, 50-yard pass where Smith-Njigba did not have to adjust at all. It basically landed in his hands. I don't think he shut the door on him being the number one pick. It's not set in stone yet. Obviously, I think he's helped himself. I've seen a lot of pro day workouts from quarterbacks. This was not a Sam Bradford type of workout where Sam Bradford missed one pass where the tight end Jermaine Gershom had to raise his hands over his head to catch the ball and everything else was on the mark. It was a real good workout. It wasn't an outstanding workout. As far as Smith-Njigba is concerned, everyone's going to talk about the fact that he ran a 4.48, but the fact is this is, His route running was incredible yesterday. I mean, the footwork, the balance, he wasted no motion. It was just so natural. It was actually enjoyable to watch. And you could see the difference between Smith-Njigba running routes and Marvin Harrison Jr., who the sophomore who a lot of people are already mocking as a top 10 pick next year, where Marvin Harrison, when he got in the routes, would have to throttle down, chop his footwork, slow in and out of routes. Smith-Njigba, it was natural. I mean, it was the separation. He caught a great deep pass, as I mentioned, from C.J. Stroud late in the workout, where indoors in that the Woody Hayes Center, it's a gray ceiling. There's not great lighting. He was able to track the ball. It was an outstanding reception. People are going to knock him because he's not a 4.48 guy. But this day and age in the NFL, you want receivers who can separate through their routes. And that's what Smith-Njigba did. And in my opinion, he solidified himself as the number one receiver in April's draft because with that workout yesterday. As far as Paris Johnson is concerned, he's getting no press at all, but he was incredible. I mean, he literally looked like a 6'6", 311-pound power forward with his movement skills during pro day workout. Now, they're not doing any hitting. They're not doing any blocking. But when you see a guy like that, 311 pounds, who's so light on his feet, the footwork was outstanding. He's easily able to move back and forth, change direction at all. And you project that moving forward, what you're going to be able to do with a guy who – he's only a junior, so he's still a younger guy, and he's only going to get better and better as he gets stronger. And let's not forget, only played the left tackle position for 1 year. I thought Paris Johnson absolutely came out of yesterday's Ohio State Pro Day as a big winner, solidified himself as a top 10 pick. If he doesn't go 7 to the Raiders, could go 8 to the Falcons, won't get past the Chicago Bears at 9 with their need at the left tackle spot.
I do think, like, he was great, like the agility. I do think the lengths to which offensive line players try to go off and show their agility at the pro days now is kind of funny. Like, yeah. Some of the moves you see these guys do is like, well, that'll never happen in a game. I don't know why we're worried about that. But look, he's an incredible athlete. There's no question about it. But some of the stuff that you see coming out there in these agility drills, I'm like, great. How does that help?
Well, but I think what the point is, this is, can you move like that and stay on your feet? Do you show balance, or are you all over the place? And like I said, 6'6", 311-pound power forward, 11-pound ballerina, the way he was able to do it so effortlessly. I agree with you. You're not going to be doing that on Sundays in the NFL, but it's a matter of, can you do this, keep on balance, stay under control? And Johnson did that yesterday, did it exceptionally well.
It's going to be interesting to watch where that offensive tackle run happens in the NFL draft there. Does that start with Atlanta at 8? If Las Vegas, it could be at 7, like you mentioned, if Las Vegas truly is honed in on Jimmy Garoppolo for the future. But I do agree with you. Chicago there is a lock to take, in my opinion, one of those. Paris Johnson Jr., Peter Skoronski, depending on how people view his arm length, and then Broderick Jones there. Let's move on here to quarterback sleepers, Tony. Obviously, everyone wants to find themselves a Brock Purdy. I don't think that there is a Brock Purdy in every draft class, but in this one, do you think there is someone who...
Well, technically, there is a Brock Purdy in every draft class because someone will be drafted last.
Yeah, there you go.
That's true. So on one level, there is a Brock Purdy in every draft class, but not the level you were talking about.
Well, to answer your question, I'm going to give you three names. Same person, Dorian Thompson-Robinson of UCLA. The buzz on Dorian Thompson-Robinson has been exceptional for the past couple of weeks, and people just keep talking about him more and more and more. Somebody at the Combine said he could go day two, and I was like, that's a load of garbage. Somebody, another scout at the UCLA Pro Day, said that Dorian Thompson-Robinson is going to be the best value at the quarterback position because they think he's going to go in the fourth round. And he's not going to have all that pressure being an early pick at the quarterback spot. And he's got an amazing amount of upside potential. He's an outstanding athlete. You look at him, he looks like a more athletic version of Jalen Hurts with his ability to run the ball. He's got a tremendous arm. He's just got to polish his game. People are looking at him as a guy who, you're not going to start him in year one the way Brock Purdy was forced into the lineup late in the season. But you can develop him, and he's got a great amount of upside. We interviewed him at the Shrine Bowl at Pro Football Network. He's an interesting guy. He's an artist. He's very cerebral, and he's a great mix of athleticism and intellect. I reached out to find out what teams are really looking at him right now. I heard the Vikings, I heard the Saints, I heard the Seahawks. All teams that don't need a starting quarterback in 2023, but need to start looking forward, you know, after that for a quarterback that they can develop. So Dorian Thompson-Robinson, I believe, is going to be selected a lot earlier than people are expecting right now.
We're hearing a ton right now about the Seahawks doing a lot of work on those quarterbacks, and we were hearing them connected with a lot of the guys at the top of the class. Of course, the selfie from C.J. Stroud that came out here over the past 24 hours with him, with the entire Seahawks brass there. But not to discount what they can do here later on in the draft, looking at some of those guys like Hendon Hooker, like Dorian Thompson-Robinson, that's something definitely to keep in mind.
Well, and that's really smart, because remember, the Geno Smith deal is really a one-year deal.
It is.
It's a one-year deal. Like all these, it's a one-year deal. It's a one-year deal for Geno Smith, and then we'll see.
And two, like with the way that deal is constructed, if Geno plays well, great, we'll keep him at $30 million, whatever. Correct. Like it's a very, very minimal cap hit. That's a great deal for the Seahawks with what they were able to negotiate there with Geno
Smith. And let's not forget, I mean, they signed Matt Flynn to a big free agent deal, and then they took Russell Wilson the third round that year.
Exactly. Right?
And they developed Russell Wilson. So you sign Geno Smith to a nice size deal, potentially 1 year deal. You don't have to take a quarterback early in the draft. You can wait later on and get a guy like Dorian Thompson-Robinson and then develop him. And I think Geno Smith would be a great mentor for Dorian Thompson-Robinson.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's wrap up the show here with some good news. Who are some of the prospects that are making the most out of the pro day circuit, in your opinion, Tony?
Well, some of the biggest surprises, and surprise meaning these are guys who weren't even on the scouting radar. And all of a sudden, because of pro day workouts, people are going back to watch the film. Ben Van Sumeren of Michigan State, former Michigan player, transferred to Michigan State, had 12 tackles in 2021. Last year had 81 tackles, 6'1", 237 pounds, had a vertical jump of 42.5 inches, ran a sub 4.4 40, 29 reps on the bench. Matt Jester of Princeton, another linebacker, had 30 tackles each of the past two seasons, ran in the low 4.5s, 27 reps on the bench, 7.25 three cone at 6'3", 252 pounds. Also did some work at fullback, caught the ball well. Now, what does it mean? What happens is in the later rounds, teams start to go with the guys that got the computer numbers, the guys that got the measurables, the guys who got great size and great speed, because they don't really need those guys to make the roster. Those are the developmental guys that maybe they make the roster, or they can sneak them onto the practice squad. So a guy like Van Sumeren of Michigan State or Matthew Jester of Princeton, they went from guys who were non-entities in the draft. Now all of a sudden teams in the later rounds will take a look at them because of their measurables, because of their pro day testing.
Van Sumeren, I need everyone who's listening to this to understand how stupid those testing numbers are for Van Sumeren. That is absolutely ridiculous. And that's really, once you get past round 3 of the NFL draft, you now move into, okay, let's get some special teams guys that can make the roster, and hopefully we can develop them into something else, like you mentioned, Tony. So Van Sumeren definitely made himself some money here in the pro day circuit. All right, guys, that is it for today's show. Tony, Trey, thank you guys so much for taking some time out, dropping some knowledge here on the Football Insiders. Anything else to add here before we get out of here?
Just real quickly on Jester, just a good week for Princeton continues with what's happening in the NCAA tournament. So it's really good to be a Princeton Tiger right about now.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much again. Make sure that if you're watching this, make sure that you're hitting the like button and subscribing over on YouTube, and also click that bell to get notified when new content drops. All right. For Football Insiders, I'm Kyle Yates. We'll see you next time.